sponsor before we get to other testimony. Considering, or have you considered the section that deals with the limitations of if it's a B felony below 5 years statute of limitations for registration, I guess, and 10 years for that above? The information that is available, has been available to me and the public and the media, is especially some particular areas of sexual offenders, the chances of rehabilitation are poor for a heck of a lot longer than 10 years. Why should we limit registration at all, I guess is a fair question.
Well, I'm sure, I have to know that the sponsor wouldn't mind increasing those time periods. As a matter of fact, many, many states have a lifetime for all sex offenders. And the only way that you can be released of your duty to register is by appealing to the court. After X number of years of a clean record, eventually they'll say, okay, you appear to be good, but that's only with the courts, by requesting the court. There is a lifetime registration, and I'm sure that that's, I can check with the sponsor to be sure, but I don't think she
would
object to that at all.
Thank you very much. With that in mind, we will have testimony from the corrections and the public safety, so we can have perhaps some of the questions that we have will be answered during those presentations.
I might make one comment on
Sarah.
That while Doug is still here then. And I will just notify the committee that I had a district teleconference 2 weeks ago, and my district is the Kenai Peninsula Homer area, and several other people in Homer came to testify on this specific bill and said, but why are you giving, in the original bill, we were giving them 45 days or something like that to register once they moved to Alaska. Their main concern was, why are you giving them that much time? That's too much time when you cut it down. So I'm really, really pleased to see, to have that input from the public before we got this far with the bill, but also then to be able to put it in, cutting down the time frame.
Would you like me to quickly address the changes that have been made in the next, or should I wait on that?
It probably would be to the benefit of those that are going to subsequently testify to hear that, so that in case their testimony runs afoul of something that's already proposed for a change, they don't have to bother. So why don't you briefly, Doug, go ahead and run down that.
Okay. There aren't a lot of changes. The one I mentioned already is at the bottom of page one, the last sentence, section one, it raises the penalty for failing to register for those who have been convicted of more serious crimes from Class B felony offense to a Class A. And in response, in large respect due to the testimony we received about the time period, we shortened the time period that we give sex offenders to register. Section 1 and 2 on page 2 under registration of sex offenders used to both read 30 days. They now read 7 days for those who are present in the state. We'll have 1 week in which to register. Those who become physically present in the state from other jurisdictions have 14 days to register. Unless they are part of the AS 3336110 through 120, which is Interstate Compact on Probation and Parole, which is a multi-state, while all 50 states participate, parole and probation program, where someone will come to Alaska from another state, a crime committed in another state, and Alaska will assume the responsibilities for their parole and probation supervision, and then we send people out into the same program. Anybody that comes to Alaska under that program would be treated as if they were present and also have 7 days in which to register. They used to have 45 days, as Representative Phelps mentioned. On page 3, section C at the top, starts off, if a sex offender is required to register on this, if they're unable to register at Alaska State Trooper stations, then they can register with the Municipal Police Department. This is a slight change. Before, it mentioned that if they were within 50 miles, if more than 50 miles from the state trooper station, then they could register with the Municipal Police Department. The reason it was changed to just unable to register is that the Department of Public Safety pointed out that a lot of the times there may be a state trooper station there, but the trooper is going to be gone for a week or 10 days escorting prisoners. And so it wasn't the fact that there may be one right there, so they wouldn't fall within the provision of being more than 50 miles away, they still would be able to register. So this is designed to take care of that. And this whole provision is just to make sure that it isn't an undue burden on somebody to have to fly a great distance to find a state trooper station. And one other small technical change, page 4, under Central Registry of Sex Offenders, it used to read Alaska State trooper shall maintain the central registry, and now it reads Department of Public Safety shall maintain the central registry. And that was just to keep in line with the second half of that sentence, that shall adopt regulations, Department of Public Safety adopts regulations rather than troopers, so that was just kind of a technical change. And that's how the proposal is different from the community substitute.
Representative Kennedy, do you have questions, please?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Doug, I want to kind of readdress an issue that we talked about earlier here in the State Affairs. You brought up an idea that there's a possibility that we might want to extend the period to a lifetime, which we're going to require sex offenders to continuously register. If that isn't the case, are we also talking about going back retroactively more than just the original 10 years? And if we do, are we perhaps running into a constitutional issue or at least a problem in acquiring the records of, let's say, a sex offender from 1955 who's still around?
So that's a good point, and I suspect the way the statute's written now, it cross references to if you're still required to register under these sections, which were 5 and 10 years, if you require a lifetime, then you may have to go back much further. And it may be that we can only go back as a practical matter so far in getting records from other states or even finding about convictions from other states. That could be a problem that has to be addressed.
And a follow up, if I might, and we talked about this earlier. If there is, let's say it was a person that was convicted, was released on parole, probation, wherever the case might have been, and they completed that probationary period, and then we attach a new provision here, post parole or post. Yeah, is this now an ex post facto law?
Well, I don't believe that it is. An ex post facto law, or the prohibition against an ex post facto law, is you can't pass a law that increases the penalty for a crime that you've already committed. And that's unconstitutional in Alaska as well as under the United States Constitution. But when determining whether or not a law violates that provision, the court looks to see whether or not you're dealing with a punishment or just a regulatory law. If you're dealing with a punishment, then they go into an ex post facto analysis. In this case, as it's been held in all the other states that have address this issue all by the courts. This is seen as a regulatory action. It's not designed to punish. It's just designed to try and keep track of sex offenders to protect the public and for to aid in law enforcement. Because it's not a punishment, it doesn't violate the prohibition against ex post facto law. And I don't think that increasing it to a lifetime registration will change that, as it hasn't in the other states. The Alaska court has said that their analysis under ex post facto is the same as the federal government's analysis, and they've stated this in their opinion. And the federal government's federal constitution doesn't see regulatory laws such as this to be in violation.
Even after a person has completed the conditions of parole?
Yes.
Or are the other states looking at it while a person is on parole?
The other states, most of these, all of these laws go beyond parole periods. Alaska, the time doesn't toll until you finished your probation or parole in the first place. So this comes afterwards. And it is retroactive, and the other states are retroactive as well. So they apply to people who are already off parole. And all those states have upheld any challenges under the ex post facto.
Any other questions?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm confused then. If this is not going to be held as a violation of ex post facto, then why would there be a problem in the fact that the person may have only had a 5 or 10 year probation, but now we're requiring them to register for life? I don't see why would that necessarily extend the search back?
Well, I guess, as I understand Representative Kratz's earlier question about the way the law is written now, someone's only required to register. Say they committed a more serious sex offense and they've got a 10 year period in which they're supposed to register. But if they committed their crime 8 years ago, they're still covered. But if they committed their crime 12 years ago, then they aren't covered. If we have a lifetime registration period, then it becomes a question as to whether or not anybody ever convicted of a sex crime from another state, even as you said in 1950 in Arkansas, for your example, would also be required to register. And it may be maybe not a constitutional problem, but a practical problem.
Yeah, thank you. I share that concern.
Thank you. Representative Reynolds?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Doug, I'm wondering, I understand your explanation about the regulatory nature and why, you know, this imposition of registration upon an offender would not be subject to ex post facto. But if the person fails to register, then they committed a misdemeanor. So they committed a crime, essentially. And I'm just wondering, how does that, do you get into an ex post facto situation if you try to impose the misdemeanor?
Well, I don't believe so, because it's like any regulatory action, there can be a punishment, including jail time, for failure to follow that regulation, whether it's a driver's license requirement or anything else. But if the law itself is regulatory, the violation of that law being made illegal doesn't bring in an ex post facto problem.
Any further questions, Doug? Okay, thank you very much, Doug. I would like you to ask your sponsor if some of the changes we've talked about would be offensive. If not, we'll consider them. Thank you. Commissioner Rep, please join us.
Afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Lawyer, Commissioner Corrections. I'm pleased to be here this afternoon. Just a couple of comments I'd like to make. First of all, I certainly support the proposed legislation. My only reclama would be, has already been expressed, I think it ought to be a lifetime registration. And I think I'd like to just kind of give you a little bit of background as to why I say that. Some of you may be aware, I ran a sex offender treatment program for 3 years, created one for the United States Marine Corps of all places. And glad Terry's not here. And also I've been involved in helping the Navy develop their new sex offender treatment program in the last few years. And out of that background, one of the things I got to do, because we were given some very good sponsorship, was to deal with a number of people who were considered to be the experts and the people who had been in this field for a number of years. People like Gene Abel from BMI, Jeff Becker from New York Psychiatric, Fred Berlin, and John Hawkins. And there are a couple of things that I would just kind of like to throw out on the table for your consideration. One of them, Gene and his folks did an interesting piece of research at New York Psychiatric, which showed essentially dealing with particular pedophiles, that for every known perpetration, that is for every time that law enforcement exposes a particular sexual perpetration, there were approximately 150 events that were not reported. And when you're dealing with paraphilia, which is what DSM-3R supplies say, you're dealing with people who have sexual demons, which is lifelong. And that's why, as one who's worked in this field and who has observed as a correctional practitioner for years, I'm strongly in support of lifetime registration. I think not to do that is to put children at risk and put others at risk. The other thing, just to, I'm not a clinician, I don't claim to be, but as a practitioner who's dealt in this area, it's important to realize that the research in the last 10 years pretty well documents that paraphilia is a good term. We used to think that people who molested kids, and that's what they did. That is just not proven true. We now find that people who you have in your institution as rapists, in fact, may have also molested children, and vice versa. And there may be a migration. People who start off with doing patonage suddenly turn into violent rapists. Not suddenly. In fact, it's a process that's fairly well predictable in some cases. So I would just kind of lay that out as background, and again, a lot of information out there available to you, but to generally support the idea that it is important to look at lifetime registration as a possibility for this particular class. I guess beyond that, I would simply make clear that the department supports registration. We'll do everything in the law done to maintain that. And from a treatment standpoint, one of the things we tell people who are involved in sexual demons is that they have, and you need to consider what they have, as a lifetime proposition. They have a mindset that is at last their life, and they have a need to make sure that they have requisite controls in order to handle their problem. Not unlike people who are addicted to alcohol or drugs or other kinds of diseases. And again, I believe what this law will do, if it is extended properly, is to give a clear statement from society that the society understands that and intends that the perpetrator understand that about themselves.
Thank you for your time. Thank you. Question, if I may, on this point, for the record, have you, with your experience in this field, ever come across a pedophile that was rehabilitated?
The research I'm familiar with says that, well, let me back, if I may, it's a little way answering your question, but I think it's important to, again, understanding what we're dealing with here. And very often, we use terms like sex offender when clinically it has no meaning. It is more of a legal term. When we deal with clinical paradigms, we're always talking about people who are pedophiles, for instance, but then beyond that, are they fixated? You know, is there a chronicity about their behavior? Are they acute in their behavior? And one of the things that we look at particularly is whether or not there's a violent component. Are they sadistically oriented? Now, if you're asking about sadistic pedophiles who are fixated, the answer is never, never, and never do you want to put your money in the bank on one of those folks, okay? Just probably you're going to lose that in your shirt. If you're asking, are there people who do pedophilic acts that at a certain point in their life get come to the surface, could someone like that be, whatever rehabilitated means, could they get under control and control themselves? Certainly that happens. It happens in programs in San Diego, from everyone in the Ferry Corrigan has, for instance, they use Deborah Rivera, they have a very fair track record of dealing with people who are not really highly fixated individuals. And again, there would be clinicians who would probably take different points of view on that one, you know, put that up front. Now, to answer your question, personal experience, have I ever, no sir, I never have, okay? I keep looking for that person out there somewhere, and I'm sure they are. But the difficulty in dealing with the whole term sex offender, obviously you throw in that people, for instance, who are incestuous for short periods of time. Do you have a good outcome with treatment? Absolutely. There are all sorts of data to indicate that you can't work with that population. Date rape is not the same thing as someone who is a sadistic rapist. Within those categories, there are differences, that's all. And so I guess my plea is always to make sure that we deal, when we're dealing with that kind of thing, we deal with terms that are really have utility, rather than these kind of bombic things that we use. Sometimes it does pose a problem. But it doesn't hurt to register them. It doesn't really make any difference whether they're what their particular kind of paraphilia is concerned. From my standpoint as a correctional practitioner, it isn't going to hurt to register them. Not a bit. What you do is you aid law enforcement very clearly. And what's important about that is go back to that research that I mentioned. If you're talking about people, for instance, who molest kids, they're on the street molesting kids. That's what they do. And every day that you can, you know, that you can get at them and get them out of that business is a day that you save some children some agony in their life. So you don't lose anything by registering those people, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you, sir. Any questions, Commissioner? If not, thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you.
Next, could we hear from Deputy Commissioner Swackhammer, Department of Public Safety.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is C.E. Swackhammer, Deputy Commissioner of Department of Public Safety. Department of Public Safety supports this legislation for two primary reasons. One is that we feel it'd be a deterrent to sex offenders knowing if they're registered and somebody's watching them. The second is that it will aid law enforcement in terms of working unsolved crimes. I make myself available to talk about the technical aspects of registering and so forth. But I would like to thank for Chief Ron Audie, who was the president of Alaska Chiefs of Police Association, and the ARA in support of this legislation.
The increase in the penalty time, will that cause the department any problem at all? The system is already in place, so in my mind, it shouldn't cause a problem to increase the,
number of years.
The increase in time they have to register. That shouldn't cause the department any problem, like the 7 days and 14 days.
No.
All right. I just want to make sure of that. In page 2, section C, where it says they have the ability to go to the municipal police department located, you know, the nearest municipal, will that include the VSOPs in the villages?
VPSOs? No, it wouldn't. The thrust of this language was we have several one and two man posts throughout the state where there is a sizable municipal police department, Valdez, Cordova, Petersburg, et cetera, et cetera. And the troopers are several times gone for long periods of time. And we wanted to ensure that a sex offender wasn't able to miss the opportunity to register to will by simply going at a time where a trooper was not available, so I tried to comply and wasn't able, so that prevented BPSOs normally will not have the fingerprint equipment or the photography equipment, but there would be a trooper, an oversight trooper close enough to be able to handle the situation.
Okay, my next question, if I may, on the issue of failure to register being a crime, and it is essential that public notice will have to go out to make sure everybody is aware of this. What has the department looked at as far as a plan to implement that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, in the fiscal note, the plan is to do the advertisement to motor vehicles to register license, probably through the court system, corrections, that sort of thing.
Will you do radio newspaper spots, that type of thing? Or? And then I think the last question I have is probably the toughest. There's objection to this bill in some areas because of constituencies that might turn out to be a vigilante type constituency that will run down and get all this information available immediately in order to go on the opposite extreme of what we're trying to do here and take on vigilante personalities going after these people. Has the department looked at that? Or have you considered that? No, I'm not trying to protect the criminal at all, but I think it's going to be an issue that will come up, so we might as well bring it up right here.
I really have not given that any thought. I think a lot has to do with how the information is disseminated, which the purpose of the regulations is to provide us an opportunity to make sure that we properly deal with the Freedom of Information Act and the Privacy Act and those kinds of issues, and who should get the information in this police department, other people that request the information.
Specifically, one of our legislators has a constituency that they're very concerned about that aspect.
If I may, perhaps a response to that constituency would be that we are convicting people of sexual offenses in the state all the time. So the opportunity if that were a real concern for that having already happened is coming on 1,000 times. Consequently, if we start now, and it's had so many previous opportunities. Are there any other questions of the commissioners? I have one. We spoke about an area that isn't in this bill, that is in bills in a couple of other states at least, that address the provision of a person so convicted upon conviction or shortly before release, submitting a biological sample for DNA testing and storage. You have any comments on that?
Yes. California is one of those that require blood swab. We think it'd be very advantageous, especially considering the fact that a lot of times you have unknown perpetrators, and if you had a database and where you could do a DNA test. Our problem in the state of Alaska is that our technology is not up with DNA. And frankly, the technology that's advancing with DNA, the military, for instance, is using it. In the process of taking blood samples as dog tags, I mean, that's how sophisticated DNA testing is. Our crime lab does not have that ability. We would certainly want, we figure it'd be 2 to 3 years before our technology would catch up. And we see it a great advantage in having that ability.
Would the department then perhaps support an inclusion in this that would allow, say, by regulation, the department when technology is available to adopt this requirement?
Yes. Yep.
Are there any questions of the commission? President
Kapp. Mr. Chairman, I just got kind of an indirect question here just to get the department's feeling on an issue. Would the department be supportive of a program that would call for registration of anyone, let's say, convicted of an unclassified felony? Murderer.
Well, we have that to some degree. I mean, law enforcement does have the ability through records checks, but in terms of categorizing people as such as the registration, we don't under normal course, if you're comparing this bill with the concept that you're talking about, the information that was collected through the Department of Public Safety would be disseminated to various law enforcement agencies that would have jurisdiction. I could see some advantages in drug offenses. But sometimes you get so much debt, I mean, how do you deal with it?
The floodgates are open.
Mike, would it be correct, Commissioner, to say that one of the opportunities for learning that a sex offender is present in the state that hasn't registered would be the normal course of records checks that one makes on suspects?
For somebody that moved, Mr. Chairman, that moved into the state, that would be one process. We would also be working with corrections and probation and parole for the interstate transfers of people that are moving from one state to another one.
I when I was campaigning this summer, going door to door, I went into a neighborhood that there was a somehow the neighbors found out that a convicted child molester had moved into the house down the street, and I was curious about that because I knew this bill hadn't passed, and I was wondering first of all how they found out. I guess that's my first question. The second question is that they were upset that the APD never went to them and told them, or somehow somebody official in the neighborhood wasn't notified. They had, the way they found out about this was that there were kids that were lured into the house, and there was, you know, very inappropriate pictures on the walls, and the kids kind of got scared, and they came home and told them their parents about it, and they sort of got a little bit vigilante, but not anything that a, you know, responsible parent wouldn't do, and contacted the authorities, and finally were able to bring enough pressure to bear so that the guy moved out, which is, you know, obviously a good result, except, you know, who's where he is right now. But how did, just to repeat my questions, how would they have found out, first of all, that the person was a convicted sexual offender? Secondly, is there any process that you foresee in implementation of this that somehow responsible parties in the community can be made aware that someone's moved into their neighborhood?
The first part of your question is, how would someone find out? The court records or public documents? I can't tell you how that person found out, but that is one means in which a person can find out the conviction. Mm-hmm. The second part of the question dealing with how would a person go about getting the information and be held responsible for the information?
Well, I guess how much of an improvement is this over somebody discovering this fact through court records if the community is not somehow made aware that you know, a sex offender has moved into your neighborhood or was in your town?
President Norlin, the difference is that law enforcement, first of all, I think that this is geared towards law enforcement in terms of having a central registry so that we know where sex offenders are at, where they're working, where they're living, and it can be disseminated to the appropriate law enforcement agencies. The issue of how to deal with who gets the information and how that's disseminated is something that we would work through the regulations to make sure that we don't violate the Right to Privacy Act and that we also comply with the Freedom of Information Act. I mean, it seems to be too conflicting, but there are two standards there. So, and that's the reason we appreciate the opportunity of dealing with that through regulations so that we would have more time to deal with that. And frankly, public safety would be the one that would be liable if there were any breaches of any of those, and so we can rest assured that we'll take every step necessary to make sure that we comply with this.
Okay. Representative, thank you. Just one more. If we do, in fact, pass this legislation and require a sex offender's register on an annual basis, and let's say it's a lifetime period, what do you think the chances are, from the court perspective, of that person pleading to a charge? You know, there seems to be some impetus here that would, I think, cause a person to perhaps change a plea and plead guilty to a lesser offense or a similar offense, as long as it doesn't fall into that category of sex offense.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my personal opinion is that I don't think that's going to change the fact situation. I think when a person makes a decision about registering or making a plea, I think a lot has to do with the weight of the evidence and what ultimate time they're going to serve in jail and probation and parole. I don't think the fact that they would have to register as a sex offender will make any difference. And to be very frank, once a person's convicted, whether they plead or whether they're convicted by jury, they're there until their death. In other words, their record stays in the criminal system until their death, unless ordered differently by the court.
Thank you very much. Next person.